He is Justin Davis, user experience designer and vacation visionary.
I thought you were going to say vagrant. And he is Aubrey Goodman, web services and dev extraordinaire and Bay Area baron.
Oh.
And this.
Oh, excellent.
Is a yes. Little show that we call Distilled. Welcome in here. Thanks for being here. You can grab this online at Distilled Radio or distilledpodcast.com, on Twitter at Distilled Radio. I'm on Twitter. I'm Justin. I'm on Twitter at JWD2A, or you can call me whatever the hell you want to call me. And Aubrey is at Aubrey Goodman. A more sensible name on Twitter.
More, but not completely.
More, but maybe not completely. And if you want to hear something on the show, just hashtag distilled topics on Twitter. I need to check that right now. See if we have anything. But no, we have a topic standing
we just
by.
Have the one.
That maybe that'll be next week's topic, actually.
Yeah,
we'll set that up.
Sense.
Yeah. So anyway, that's that. Welcome in here. And we hope you enjoyed the podcast, and we'll see you guys soon enough. Oh, we're not done, are
no,
we?
No.
Oh, okay. I thought that was the whole thing.
Not a closer.
Oh, God.
Right.
There's content in this podcast?
We were going to talk about something, yeah.
Wow.
We don't really know what. We never do.
No.
I mean, sometimes we do.
Sometimes we do, but this is a particularly difficult one. Wow. Mm. No. Hashtag distilled topics.
Nothing.
Zero, and there was one.
They don't it's not like an all-time thing. They'll only show you like in the last week.
Oh, really? Well, that's stupid.
Yeah, so it's a good thing we caught that. It's a good thing we check that every week.
Yeah, no kidding, right? Man,
otherwise it got all false. You know, because it's such a high traffic.
I know, right?
Yeah. It gets lost in the noise. No, it's getting lost in the silence.
Getting lost in the silence. You're so quiet, you get lost in the silence. That's like being so pale, you get lost in the wall.
Yeah, okay. I know I haven't been out to the beach that much.
You live in Florida.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is actually as tan as I've been in a long time.
It's bad. If you guys want to get a feeling for how tan Aubrey is, go to your printer and pull out a sheet of paper.
Or look down at your coffee cup and the white, the pasty white solo cup lid is probably a little bit tanner than me.
Yeah, that I would say, yes, we would call that a tint. So let's see. What were we talking about today? So Aubrey was just on a recent excursion out to the other bay.
Yeah, let's go through our mutual double entendres.
Yes, indeed.
So, Bay Area Baron, I'm in between lifestyles at the moment. It sounds like.
Yes.
Or at least, hopefully so.
A possible.
Yeah, there's a great opportunity for me to move out to San Francisco, which is the Bay Area capital T.
True.
I was actually saying stuff like this about that when I was out there. I was like, "Oh, I live in the other Bay Area." They're like, "No, no, 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 no." I saw.
They'll take kindly.
I saw
that.
A billboard that had a it was a Southwest Airlines billboard, and it said it was like a picture of a plane, you know, like travel billboard, and it said, "No, don't call it Frisco, comma, or summer."
Or summer.
Because it's July. I'm wearing a long sleeve shirt with a hoodie over right. top of it, and I'm chilly.
That's hilarious. Wow.
But they're like, no, don't even call it. Like, you don't know. It's not the other Bay Area. You can't even. You're just Tampa Bay. That's what that is.
Damn it. Damn it. Don't steal this from me.
No. They don't take kindly to it.
No.
So yeah, Bay Area Baron is doubly apropos for me.
Yeah.
And for you, vacation visionary.
Yeah.
Because you're recently vacationing and also making an app that makes it easy to plan and coordinate your vacation
in
itinerary.
Yes, that's good. That's some of the better intros that we've had. Hmm. I think.
And now that we've buried them into the ground with over explanation.
Let's do that more. yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So I think this week we're going to talk about some stuff related to diagnostics.
Yeah.
And troubleshooting things that are not in your pocket or on your computer. It's really easy to work on defects and behavior inconsistencies, things that aren't planned, or things that are planned but are planned in the wrong way. It's easy to work on those things when your device is plugged right on into your laptop and you can see the code, you can see the stack, you can see everything running. You can pause the debugger and get right in there and interrogate memory if you want. But what do you do when your product is a mobile app and it lives on thousands of other people's devices?
In different versions.
In different versions.
Different OSs. Yeah.
Yeah. And at this level, even different platforms.
Right.
Not just different, you know, like, oh, iOS 7.1 or iOS 6.2 or whatever.
Right.
That doesn't ever exist. But, you know, Android and different Android devices, even different iOS devices, the 64-bit versus the non-64-bit, all that. Oh, by the way, this will be a technical episode.
Just FYI.
Before we get too far down into
so
the
grab the bag of Cheetos and sit down.
Put down those kale chips.
That's right.
That applies to no one but me, I think, in the whole
probably
listening audience.
Kale chips.
Yeah. Maybe Allie. I don't know. I don't think
those
Allie
sound terrible. That sounds like eating feet. Never mind. For those of you who are more interested in that, check out the adult section of the iTunes podcast directory.
Again, we're getting close to earning that explicit tag.
That's right.
Getting back to topics people care about. You know, if you're working on a project that you have defects, sometimes you don't even know about them. Like in this case, what sort of sparked this discussion was I was showing Justin the the recent experience I had while in San Francisco trying to add a place to one of my
trying to use the app in the exact context it's supposed to use
precise
for
precise context, and even like that's like the 40% edge case instead of 80/20 if we look at 60/40.
Yeah.
You know, the 60/40 is like 60, you might be local looking for someplace around your house or around where you live. But the remote is like you're planning if you're at home, but you're actually trying to save for later or save for recommendations or things like that when you're traveling.
Right.
And it needs to be able to do both. And it didn't, at least in the moment when I needed it to.
No.
Shakes fist.
It failed.
And I took a screenshot and I thought, how do I get this? How do I notify the developer? I mean, in my case, I know you.
Right.
You know,
so it's a text message. It's like, what the fuck?
Podcast.
Right.
But I'm also a pain in the ass when it comes to text messages. I don't like sending SMS because they cost me money. I'm like old school. I don't have one of those unlimited plans because I guess the $20 a month for an unlimited plan is too much for me to shoulder. So instead, I end up paying like $25 a month in those months when I go over. Because, you know, most of my friends have iMessage, so I just record. I just send them.
Yeah.
You know, no problem.
Oh, yeah.
But, so I do have a screenshot. I just didn't send it to you. And I thought, you know, now that we're talking about it, as I'm sitting here explaining it, I'm like, you know, Snapchat detects if you have newly taken a photo, like, while the app is open, so that it can tell if you took a screenshot. Because Snapchat's whole thing is, we don't want you to store or record this. We don't want it to be persistent.
Right.
We want to show it to you for up to 10 seconds, and then it's gone forever in your database, and we'll keep it. And they totally do.
Oh, no doubt.
They have to, because otherwise, how would they send you things like those? They send me ads that say, like, your tweet or, like, your Snapchat was really popular, and I'm like, popular among the people who are intended recipients, or
right,
popular among your staff as a staff pick. Because I've also gotten the one that says, like, yours was a staff pick. And I'm like, guys, I'm going to stop I'm going to stop taking photos of weed.
Yeah. Right.
Just going to need to do that.
Yeah. It was a social contract that you just broke.
Yeah. It's literally in your descriptive, you know, marketing copy, assholes.
Right.
So, they detect if you take a screenshot.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking maybe we could make an app that does like diagnostics. So that if someone takes a screenshot, we know in your app. So if they take a screenshot of the drawer.
Oh, when the app is foregrounded.
When the app is foregrounded, yes.
Right.
We detect if you have a newly created photo in the photo book.
That's interesting.
Is, which is must be how they do it.
Right. And then we know exactly what screen they're on too, because we can also use the analytics inside the app to say this is the screen they were on when they took a screenshot.
Right. So you could have it so that they take a screenshot, you detect that they took a screenshot, and you ask them, like you prompt them, you say, hey, I noticed you just took a screenshot. Do you need some help with that? Let me automatically upload that to our developers so they can see what's going on.
Interesting. Interesting.
It's like real-time innovation happening right now.
Yeah, that could be cool. Yeah, I like that idea. Because, I mean, this is how a lot of diagnostics happen. You know, I think that people who aren't developers, who don't understand how apps get built, have, a very weird mental model about sort of how bugs...
Did you see that tweet from yesterday?
Which one?
The retweet that somebody posted a picture of... on the far right, there's like a mouse on the floor, and standing next to it is a kid with a shirt labeled Dev. And then like back 10 feet behind him is a bunch of people standing like with Kermit the Frog arms yelling about it. And the person in the front says project manager on his shirt. The people behind him say like dev team. The people behind him say like QA or like...
Right.
Yeah, UAT or something like that. And the very far in the back, there's someone like with just big eyes, like wearing a shirt that says client. And it's like everybody is like, oh my God, there's a bug. Wait, no, it's actually just a mouse. It's actually pretty friendly. You want to pet it?
Yeah, it's okay.
And this is the developers are going,
it's okay.
No, it's cool, actually. Let's just talk to the mouse. And everyone else is like, oh my God, squash it.
Exactly. I know, right? Like, people think the thing about it is that no one writes perfect software. There's always bugs, always will be bugs. Mm-hmm. It's like a truism of software development. There is no bug-free software, right?
Well, I mean, for things that evolve, it's constantly chasing the dragon, as it were.
Right. Yes. As it were. Yeah.
Right. I'm not explaining that one.
No. Look that one up in the Urban Dictionary. But, wow. Yeah, we definitely earned that label.
This week.
But it's often, like, here's the thing. It's a two-sided thing. One is that developers often don't even know there's a bug. Like, we don't, like, we rely on people telling us, hey, this doesn't look right.
Or software systems to tell us that.
But especially for things like this, which this is an interface thing where it's like, that shouldn't display this way. From a code testing perspective, everything 100% would pass.
Maybe.
But maybe, depending
even
on
in
how
that
right
case, like, how do you do a code test for this? Take a flight to San Francisco and try it.
Right, yeah, exactly.
Or do you somehow crowdsource people?
Yeah.
And that's where it comes into the, you know, looking at analytics and relying heavily on passive collection systems to trigger when there's a problem.
Right.
But that's hard.
Do you think you can gamify bug reporting?
Maybe.
Have users earn points and incentives for finding and reporting bugs?
I have to believe that Get Satisfaction has tried that. Or that User Voice,
you would think,
has tried that. Somebody
think.
Who's been doing the
you would
the
think. Although I've used User Voice a lot, and I've seen I not as familiar with Get Satisfaction. Although I've seen it a lot, haven't been a user of it. Mm-hmm. I've never seen anything where they actually engage with the users beyond sort of here's a form, report a thing, and vote things up.
Right.
And inside of that, you have here's the problem with that. Here's why that doesn't work is because. The user doesn't care about points in User Voice. They don't have a relationship with User Voice. User Voice is just a channel for them to scream into, right?
It's Hacker News.
Right. What they have a relationship with is the existing app. So let's say you have an app that has points anyway, has gaming anyway, right? If you can earn more points inside that app context...
There we go.
...by reporting bugs...
That we can do. Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah. So that's like... we use Fitter as an example.
Yep.
Is their app launched this week? It's Fitter, 2 T's, no E.
That's right.
FITTR app on Twitter. Yep. They're a fitness app for socializing fitness, making arbitrary fitness routines. Anything, you know, if you want to do a fitness challenge, they can. You can kind of tell it what your preferences are, and
based on the equipment that you have available,
right?
Which is really important.
Yeah, it's the MacGyver workout, basically.
Yeah,
but trademark infringement notwithstanding, it's an interesting app. And one of the things that I love about what they do is they're using social behavioral psychology to inspire people to continue the workouts that they said they would do. Yep. So if you don't do a workout that you had scheduled, it will tweet to your friends to taunt you about it and make sure that you do that. Don't skip your workout in the future.
Right.
Which we believe to be quite effective.
Yeah.
That remains to be seen, as they did just launch 2 days ago.
Right. Right.
But I think, you know, that kind of thing where they have a point system where they're working out, you know, standardizing a point system for foods that are healthy, so that you gain points by eating healthy foods and lose points by eating unhealthy foods. And it seems very reasonable that you would be able to, you know, incorporate something like that where you get like one extra point, you know, max of 3 points a day or something.
Yep.
For that. It gets a little tricky though, because, you know, at some point you start blurring the lines. Sorry for that horrible reference.
Cue music.
Yeah. Although now I'm thinking of that Word Crimes song.
That was awesome, by the way.
Now I'm much happier to be thinking about that.
Yes.
But yeah, you might blur the context a little where you start losing the focus on the fitness angle and start, you know, like, wait, am I getting fatter because of my bug reporting? I don't understand what's happening.
Well, you know, I think that what we have to do, I think the developer community probably needs to do a better job at explaining to users and making it easier for users, frankly, to report then rate. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Because the thing about it, like for Drawer, I had to work on Drawer over my vacation because there was a colossal bug that like made the entire app unusable.
Mm-hmm.
We were passing it Foursquare. The way Foursquare versions their API is they use a date, not a version number.
Right.
I find this to be a terrible idea, but whatever. Because they'll just stop supporting past dates. Right. And so we were using a date from 2012, which is when we first implemented the API.
Right.
Right. And they, like last month, they go, oh, we're not supporting anything before 2013
because
anymore.
It's 2 years old.
Right.
Right.
And
just like they do with iOS.
Right.
They phase out the 5 support when 7 comes out.
And by the way, Foursquare never sent an email to the developers telling them that.
No, I would have gotten that.
Right. And so all of a sudden, I had noticed for like 3 or 4 days with Drawer, people add things every day. I mean, if 2 days go by and no one's added something on Drawer,
something's wrong.
And so 4 or 5 days go by and no one had added something. And I'm like on the way to vacation. And I'm like, this is weird.
I feel sad inside, but right? It's not necessarily because my app is unpopular. It may be because I'm about to go on vacation and my app is popular but broken.
Yeah, exactly. So I obviously, you know, I fire everything up and I test it, and I just get an error message back from Foursquare. It's like, sorry, you're using a deprecated app, you know, version or API version.
Oh, so it's
are
like
you
not even
kidding?
Was it a 4.0 something?
What do you mean?
Like, was it error code?
Oh, yeah. It was like an error, like 401 or 40 something. I don't know.
Yeah, there is a status code.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm going to fail this time, this quiz. I would have expected myself to always get the status code quiz right. But in this case, is there a subscription? No. That's a deprecation. I'm thinking like there is a code for like your subscription has expired.
Oh, really?
Which is not the same as 401, even though it is functionally the same.
Right.
Huh. There's a placeholder for that. I forget what it is,
though. Yeah.
It's like 416 or something like that.
That's bizarre.
But yeah, so they're sending you back a code, but you're not testing for that code. You're only checking to see if it's 500.
Right.
Because, again, here we are, right back to the very, 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 very first episode.
Right.
Which you can, you lovely folks can find if you want to. It's not on distilledradio.com. You have to find that one on
iTunes. Go to iTunes and scroll up.
Yeah. Yeah, all the way. It's down.
Or actually. Down. Yeah, sideways.
All the way back to API dependency, where we talked about this.
The dark side of being dependent on an API.
Yeah, so when you use an API, sometimes they deprecate.
Right.
And they'll deprecate a version, they change the schema, and if you're not paying attention, you know. So maybe here we go again with app concepts. There's got to be a way to, and it might just be a service, like a service-based business where we go out and aggregate all of the various APIs and just kind of try and figure out when they're deprecating. Or like we just go and register for everything.
Right.
Every API out there we can find.
Cool.
And then we make a proxy email list so that we can tell you when your API is. It's like you tell us what your version is. Like you send us your gem file or whatever it is.
And we'll let you know when
it
deprecates.
We'll let you know when it's,
Or certain features that you use are deprecating. I mean, we could even interrogate to see which.
Although I don't really know how we would do that automatically. I think that would very much be a human in the loop.
Maybe
kind of a deal.
So.
Hey, interns, what are you doing next week?
Yeah, go register for every API in the world.
Yeah. Your job this week is off.
Go to programmable web and start at the top.
Yeah, it's like the Internet of Things for APIs. As the APIs start to talk to each other. And actually, it's an interesting segue because. As the Internet of Things becomes more prevalent and we start to get into that, we're going to have some kind of way of discovering, like whether it's like a directory or what. So maybe we're talking about the same thing where we're talking about an event management feature that talks about version changes that affect your configuration, but you still register, you still say, hey, here's how I work.
Right,
because I think the SOAP standard, like the way we used to do this way back, you know, when web services were originally like first started being called web services, like back in, I want to say 99, 2001, something around then. APIs weren't a thing until around that time.
Yeah,
and I just wonder, you know, the standard we used back then was something called a WSDL web service definition language. Mm-hmm. For those of you paying attention, and you know, that's like a universal joke in the architect community that it's like, oh, let me just connect to the WSDL and I'll certainly be able to know how it works. Rolls eyes, because it's such a generic standard that it has a hard time being effective in its task, which is really to describe itself. You know, self-describing web services, but I think self-description isn't enough. You know, we need to have a way to discover them as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I guess programmable web is, you know, doing something
one
like
of the
that.
Way, yeah.
But at the same time, I feel like, you know, it's like somebody needs to step up and make a nonprofit or something and just, you know, own the directory or try to like be the Ruby gems of APIs.
Right. It's bound to happen only because the dependence on APIs and the importance of APIs for building interesting technology is only going to get greater and greater. I mean, I did learn a valuable lesson, by the way, that I want to pass on to all of you people.
Let's
out there. Mobile development sucks. And here's the reason why this sucks. And this comes back to the bug reporting thing. Users often think like, holy shit, this whole thing is broken. This whole app is broken, right? Mm-hmm. In my instance, I changed two characters. I changed one character. I changed a 2 to a 4. Done. Bug fixed, right?
Yeah, 2012 to 2014.
Exactly. Done. Bug fixed.
That's for those who are really paying attention. That is an edit distance of 1.
Indeed.
1 change.
Yes. And so this is not a hard bug to fix. It's a trickle. I think I was going to say tricky, and I think I said trickle. I'm not sure. Cool. Anyway.
I was distracting you with jazz hands.
Yes, indeed. That is actually true. And so it wasn't a hard bug to fix. It was a little bit tricky to find what was happening, but mm-hmm. once I saw it, it was like, oh, yeah. Duh, easy
why,
to fix.
Why Boom. Would you know to look at a web server log for that?
Right.
Like when you're having app behavioral
exactly.
issues.
Exactly.
I mean, I know why, because that's what good diagnosticians do. But when you're thinking about it, when you're looking at the problem, to walk through the mindset of when you, from start to finish, like from when you encountered it to... like what you went through, where you thought to look,
well,
all that stuff.
I have to proceed to
try to do that.
I'll try to do this
in 1 minute.
I have to also caveat this that I was pretty drunk when I discovered issue.
See previous so, conversations about Balmer Peak.
Right,
whatnot.
Exactly.
I would say that maybe you're even better at it.
Yeah,
at
I think what maybe. I did is, you know, I saw this was happening. I saw that no one had added things, and so I was like, okay, this is weird. I don't have an iOS device, so I can't test it on device. So I fire up Titanium, I run it in the simulator, and I try to add something, and it fails. And I was like, oh, okay, that's weird.
So first, verify repeatability.
Right, verify repeatability.
Can I repeat it? Is it repeatable?
Yep, exactly.
Yep.
Then the next thing is to find the area of the application, technically speaking, where that interaction is happening. Right. So I went to the search interface that I had built that was connecting to Foursquare,
mm-hmm.
And it connects from the app to Foursquare directly. And this is comes back to my lesson that I'll pass on in just a second. And so I went there and I was like, okay, here's where the search is happening. And basically, it was at that point, it was watch the search, watch the logs happen for that specific little piece. So mm-hmm. identify, like, verify the repeatability, identify where in the application the bug is happening, like what actions cause it to happen, mm-hmm. and find those actions in the code, right? Like mm-hmm. I press search and something should happen, but nothing is happening. So right. in this little block of code, something's wrong.
Right.
And then log that block of code either using the just regular logging or console log mm-hmm. in between, console log out responses. And I think that's what I ended up having to do is I had to console log out the Foursquare response because to Titanium, everything was fine. It was getting a response. It
right.
was just like, I don't know. Right. And so
yeah,
I had
402.
To.
What do you want?
Right. Yeah, exactly. And so I had to console log the response out. And then when I console logged the response out, that's when I saw the error message from Foursquare.
Okay.
And I was like, And then I went back to the Foursquare documentation mm-hmm. to verify mm-hmm. what they said on their side about the deprecation so that I made sure to set the date far enough ahead
right.
to where everything would work and then change the character and then wait 5 days for it to be published in the App Store.
And now you're just waiting for another 2 years for this to happen again.
pretty much, yes. I probably should just... No, never mind. That's a bad idea. I want to dynamically set the date. But the point of versioning is that you don't dynamically set it. You statically... So I want to come back to my lesson on this, though, is that I'm connecting and still am currently connecting to Foursquare straight from the app to Foursquare, getting the return back. I never mm-hmm. go through my own web service.
Mm-hmm.
That is okay, but the problem is it made the bug persist for 5 more days because I had to wait on Apple right. to approve the change. If I proxied that request through my web service, I could have changed the digit, pushed it, done. Everyone's thing would have worked immediately.
Yeah.
So I think the lesson there is always proxy your API calls from a mobile app.
Yeah, for sure. I support that as a best practice. If for no other reason than when the steady stream of web service requests falls off, then that means somehow it's like something's broken.
Right.
Because if you're making the request from the app directly to Foursquare and they send you a fail, like yeah. there's no log that you have access to
no.
because it lives on the device
right.
of your user and you have no way to get to that.
Yeah.
So as we wrap up here, we're going to say a few words about our upcoming
schedule
here. So I guess, can you handle that, please?
Yeah, absolutely. So
no idea what to do.
So we our tech community took a big blow last week with the passing of a great friend and an incredible community member, Susie Steiner.
Yeah.
We were both good friends with Susie, and she meant a lot to the community, and so We want to make sure that we use our platform, our channel, as a way for the community to get a voice. Absolutely. To celebrate her life and her legacy. So coming up in the next couple of episodes, we don't exactly know when it's going to be released. We know it's going to be recorded at Startup Weekend, mm-hmm. which she was pivotal in bringing to Tampa, and is going to be happening next weekend here in Tampa, the last weekend in July. We know that we're going to be recording an episode there where we're going to invite members of the community in to tell their stories mm-hmm. about what Susie meant to them and that type of thing. And then we're going to publish that. So the publishing date remains up in the air, but we will... you'll see it within the next, we'll say, week and a half.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Yep. Something like that.
So. All right.
There you go. All right, folks.
That'll do it for us.
Appreciate you.
Thanks for listening.